from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Caspick. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Caspick, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. To subscribe to Locked On Giants Baseball, you can find us on the brand new podcast app Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can also get in your car and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Giants Baseball. Coming up on today's show, we are going to recap the three games over the weekend by the Giants against the Cincinnati Reds. The Giants winning two out of three miraculously. They really could have easily lost all three games, but they came back in dramatic fashion in two of the three games, and we're going to talk about the game notes and some really important points that come out of those game notes. But first, their record, with the two wins, they improved to 15-19 with a minus 30 run differential. So they are actually outperforming their expected win-loss record, which is 14-20, and that is really because the two games they won in this series, they won by one run, and then the one game they lost by many runs. So that's kind of how it's gone lately. It started with that Yankees series, blowout losses and close wins. That is not necessarily a good sign. The minus 30 run differential is still second worst only to the Marlins in the National League, and run differential, which is just runs scored minus runs allowed, is better at predicting future record than actual present record. And so doesn't necessarily bode well, although a lot of those runs came by guys who are no longer on the major league team. Ty Block gave up a lot of runs and Tyler Beede gave up a lot of runs. So we're going to talk about that now. In the Friday game, Tyler Beede made the much anticipated start. Mike Gerber was called up prior to the game, and he made his Giants debut, and in a corresponding move, Gerardo Parra was designated for assignment. So there was a little flurry of moves before this game. Eric Kratz was placed on the injured list as well. So Stephen Vogt, Gerber, and Beede were all activated prior to Friday's game. Beede made the start, and he looked really impressive. In the first inning, the first couple of batters through, he was throwing high 90s with a power breaking ball, and he was generating a lot of swings and misses. And immediately it looked, wow, who is this guy? He's transformed, and the stuff we saw in spring is here in this start, and it's very exciting. But then before you could blink an eye, he had given up a couple of two-out hits in the first inning and a three-run homer. And just like that, the air went out of the balloon, and it only got worse from there. So in that first inning, against a couple of batters, and Yasiel Puig specifically, there were two outs, and I was a bit surprised by the pitch calling. There was, I think, eight pitches in the at-bat, and they got ahead of Puig with two strikes early in the count, maybe one and two, and they just kept calling, and Buster really kept calling for four-seam fastballs over and over when I thought that nasty power breaking ball was very set up, and they could have just buried one in the dirt, and it would have at least been worth a shot to get a swing and miss there. But instead, it was just four-seam fastball after four-seam fastball, and he just kept fouling them off and then eventually was able to poke one into center field. The inning continued, and Derek Dietrich hit his first of two three-run homers against Tyler Beede. So as I said, it all spiraled downhill from there for Beede, who was then optioned back to the minors after the game because they needed some relief help, and they called up the switch pitcher, Pat Vendetti. But later in this game, the Giants were down 8-0 in this game. They were down 10-3 in this game. They chipped and clawed and were back to within 10-7 in the seventh inning with two outs and a runner on first. Brandon Crawford, who has really been struggling so far this year, although he broke out of it in a big way on Sunday, which we're going to get to, but he decided to bunt for a single with two outs and a runner on first in the seventh inning with Kevin Pillar on deck and the right-handed pitching Michael Lorenzen on the mound. Just wanted to say that I'm not a fan of that. Kevin Pillar historically against right-handed pitchers is just not very good at all. I know he's done well at times in a Giants uniform, but overall he has actually not done well offensively for the Giants, and especially against right-handed pitching, it's not been good. I think maybe he has one big hit against a righty all year for the Giants, and that was a home run. So it kind of skewed people's perceptions initially when he went on that tear early on, but really he's been well below average offensively, as have a lot of the Giants, to be fair. But I didn't like that play at the time, so that was just a note here. But of course, it was all forgotten later in the game. Another thing that stood out was Tyler Austin got to pinch hit in a big spot against a left-handed pitcher, and he continues to represent a real threat off the bench against left-handed pitchers, which the Giants have been severely lacking in the past. In the past couple of years, it's been the likes of Kelby Tomlinson coming off the bench late in a game against a lefty, and that, you know, maybe he could get a single, but Tyler Austin represents a threat to hit a homer, draw a walk, and sure enough, he singled and sparked a key rally in that inning. Brandon Belt had a very clutch, bases-loaded hit in the eighth inning with two outs that drove in two runs, and just wanted to say that where were all the people who say that he's never clutch when that happens? They just are silent, and that's called confirmation bias, when you kind of ignore things that go against what you believe. And then if he were to strike out in this situation, I'm sure that all the people who seem to not like Brandon Belt would come out and argue that it's proof that he isn't clutch. So when he is, it's not proof, but when he isn't, it is proof. So that doesn't make any sense. And he had a huge hit in this game. But the biggest hit belonged to Stephen Vogt, who came in the middle innings to replace Buster Posey in a blowout and ended up getting three hits, a double, a single, and then a two-out home run on the first pitch in the top of the ninth with the Giants trailing by a run. He hits the tying homer off really good relief pitcher Raisel Iglesias. The game is tied 11-11. The Giants erase an 8-0 deficit for the first time since 1989, an 8-run deficit, and win a game for the first time since 1989. So the way they were able to win it, Evan Longoria hit a home run in the 11th. Will Smith shut the door, and that was that. The Giants won the game 12-11. It was one of the best baseball games I've seen in a really long time, and I thought the best win for the Giants in a really long time, maybe since that their last playoff season in 2016. It was an incredible win, as I said, tied for the biggest lead they've ever overcome, and it was the first time they've overcome such a lead since 1989. Remember, to subscribe to Locked On Giants Baseball, you can find us on the brand new podcast app, Himalaya. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlists and new features every day. Download Himalaya on your app store and subscribe to Locked On Giants Baseball. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to briefly recap the second game and the third game of this series and talk about some specific players who had some standout performances in those games, good and bad. So that's all coming up next, but first, we talk about baseball performance all the time on this show, but what about performance in the bedroom? That's right, BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew is the first chewable with the same active FDA-approved ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they work. They can be taken anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. Yes, I actually know someone who has tried this product, and they have extremely positive things to report about its effectiveness. The best part about Blue Chew is that it's prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so there's no more visit to the doctor's office, waiting at the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness around this topic. Blue Chew is made in the United States and prepares and shipped direct, so it's cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit www.bluechew.com and get your first shipment free when you use special promo code MLB. Just pay $5 for shipping. That's it. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code MLB, and try it. It's free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. Okay, so as promised, we're going to recap the Saturday and Sunday games against the Reds and talk about some specific players that we can draw some significant conclusions from those games. So Saturday was really all about Derek Rodriguez, who gave up four home runs in this game. The Giants lost 9-2. But the point about Rodriguez specifically, unfortunately, is that he's always been a guy who has been outperforming the peripherals, which have suggested that regression was coming. And on this show, we've said a lot. We don't know if he can continue to keep this up where he's not striking people out. If they're putting the ball in play enough against you, something like home run rate takes a really, really long time to stabilize for a pitcher. And especially this season, home runs are very much up across the board. So you go into a place like Cincinnati and you're reliant on not allowing home runs, but home runs are up across the board. You're in a hitter-friendly ballpark and you're not striking people out. It's kind of a recipe for disaster, and that's exactly what happened. So coming into the game, Rodriguez had peripherals that suggested a much worse ERA than what he was sporting. And then after the game, he gives up the 4 home runs, and his ERA, sure enough, balloons up to 5.75 and essentially has peripherals to match. He has a 6 fielding independent pitching, a xFIP of almost 5, and he's allowing an average of over 2 home runs per 9 innings on the season. So that's all inflated now beyond what we should expect. He should be better now than he's been, but he's always been a very risky pitcher in this regard. If ever there was someone to be skeptical about, it was his 2018 season. We talked on this show early on about how he was good at inducing weak contact, and that could explain how he's able to beat those peripherals. Although now on the season, he's not allowing weak contact at all. The league has a 362 weighted on base average against him, which is very high. And the expected weighted on base average is almost identical at 365. So some real red flags for Derek Rodriguez. We will have to continue to see if he can essentially just limit home runs in a high home run environment. That's like the only way that he'll probably be able to have success, which again is not something we can't just look at last season and say, okay, he's good at it, because home run rate takes a really long time to stabilize. And that's why we use something that sets a player's home run rate to the league average, and then we can predict their performance based on that. So on Saturday, it was kind of the same story with Jeff Samardzija going out there and getting lit up in the first inning, although the ending was much better as the Giants were able to actually come back again and win the game. But in terms of Samardzija himself, it was exactly the same story. He entered the game with a really good ERA, but the peripherals were screaming that massive regression was coming. He had a 4.94 xFIP, which is suggesting, again, that with a league average amount of home runs, he should have something like a 5 ERA. So what was sustaining his performance was that he was preventing home runs at a rate that we would not expect to continue, and he gives up 3 home runs on 3 consecutive pitches in the first inning, and all of a sudden now for the season, instead of being well above average at preventing homers, he's allowing 1.5 home runs per 9 innings, which is worse than average. So it still hasn't really burned him in terms of ERA. He still has a 3.16 ERA, but peripherals say 4.5 to 5 is coming. So those are not pretty numbers. And the way he's able to have the ERA that he has is that he is stranding more runners than we should expect, and he's holding them to a 225 average on balls in play, which is much better than we should expect. In terms of the contact, the only way you could really explain numbers like that is if he's allowing really, really weak contact, but in fact, it's kind of the opposite. He has a 279 weighted on base average against him, but a 311 expected weighted on base average. So for his career, those numbers are like aligned. His actual results and his expected results are pretty much the same. So I have no reason to believe he's going to outperform his expected results by 30 or more points like he is right now. So continue to expect more regression. I'm not saying he can't be a useful pitcher, but a 3.16 ERA, just simply put, does not look at all sustainable for Jeff Samardzija. But thankfully, it didn't matter. The Giants' offense came to life. Steven Duggar he broke up a no-hitter by Luis Castillo in the 6th inning. The Giants were losing 4-0. He had many hits in this series, and it's still ongoing. There's a game today. But Duggar has been much better recently. And in fact, going back to the start of that road trip in Washington, D.C., he's been 32% above average offensively and looking really good. He's had a 327 average, a 379 on base, and a 481 slugging since that first game in Washington, D.C., which was now like a couple of weeks ago. So he's been pretty good for a couple of weeks now. So that is good to see. It looks like he's coming out of that early season funk. Buster Posey had a huge 3-run homer with 2 outs to tie this game. And I'm very encouraged by what I've seen from Posey. We've talked about him a lot on the show, but his isolated power is at its highest level since 2014, isolated power being slugging percentage minus batting average. And that is significant because whether your batting average is suppressed or not, isolated power is something we can expect to like carry on with you as your batting average rises. And we don't talk about batting average a lot, but in the context of Posey, the reason it's significant is because he has a batting average on balls in play that's like 30 points below his career average. And even last season when he was pretty much a non-factor offensively, he still had like a 316 average on balls in play. And so far this year, it's only 289. So if we expect it to bump up 20 or 30 points, which we do expect, you would bump up his average and on base percentage 20 or 30 points and keep that ISO the same, the difference between slugging and batting average. So then the slugging goes way up because the batting average has gone way up. So if he was sporting a BABIP that we would expect for him, he would have a really good offensive line. And so he, quite simply, he just needs a little bit of a higher percentage of balls in play to go in for hits, which we should expect. And when that happens, he's going to look like a solid offensive player. So good signs for Posey. Again, it's the most kind of power per hit he's exhibiting since 2014, when he was like 40% above average offensively. He hit another double in the ninth inning. And then Brandon Crawford had probably his biggest hit of the year, a home run off Raisel Iglesias. They got to him again. Giants took the lead and they won the game and won 2 out of 3 so far in the series. So those were a couple of huge comeback wins for the San Francisco Giants, games that looked like they were lost and they won those games. So enormous. It remains to be seen if they'll be able to claw back into contention this season. It remains very unlikely based on the roster they have and where they're at with their kind of retooling and trying to reposition themselves. But I do think that their roster is interesting and there's not as many black holes as there used to be, and every guy represents some kind of asset, whether it's defensively or some kind of a platoon situation. So I remain impressed. Trevor Gott threw well again in relief. He's been a great signing. I like Stephen Vogt, obviously won a game pretty much by himself already in his first game. Seeing some good things for the San Francisco Giants. So I cannot wait to watch this early game today on Monday. This episode, strangely, is going to come out after that game has already started. But we will be back with another episode on Tuesday talking about today's game, the series finale against the Reds. To subscribe to Locked On Giants Baseball, you can find us on the brand new podcast app Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can also get in your car and tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Giants Baseball. This is a daily show, Monday through Friday, with episodes approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. If you liked this show, please consider leaving a review and telling your friends and family to listen and subscribe to Locked On Giants Baseball. Cannot wait to be with you again tomorrow, and until then, we'll see you next time.